Joy on Paper, a program for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from the Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, every Tuesday and Thursday, I have the fun and the joy of talking to authors about their books and looking for inspiration for you so that you also can get out there and write a book. And today you're going to be inspired. I have a wonderful guest in the studio. It's so thrilling. She is a local writer and an activist. I love that word activist because it means she got out there and actually did something. And Bonsu Brandvik, it's so nice to have you in the studio today.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, when we talk about your activism, we're talking about how you, well, not single-handedly, but pretty much went out there to try to save the fantastic Bellevue Biltmore Hotel.
Well, I can't take credit for that, but I did join the effort to preserve the hotel. We have failed at that effort, unfortunately, but through the struggle, I think I have managed to help preserve the memory of the hotel for the ages.
And you've done that by... Bonsu is writing, she says 4-book series, but you never know. You know with writers, they always leave something open there, and it could be a lot more because she's already written 2 books that are based on the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. And you have to tell us a little bit about the history because for people in the area, of course, we know how beautiful a magnificent hotel it was and the history of it. So, you know, let's talk about those... the hotel and how you got involved in it.
All right. Well, when I first got involved in the hotel, I had gone there, like most people, for weddings and different events, but I had only seen it for those events. I'd gone to the room where the wedding was being held and things like that. They had a legendary Mother's Day brunch where I would stand in a line to get into the Tiffany Ballroom to eat. And when all of a sudden, it was 2002, 2004, between those times, a developer started talking about wanting to raise the building and replace it with condos. And that's when the whole town got involved. And they actually said, no, you can't have our hotel. And they put an ordinance in place to stop the hotel from ever being destroyed. We found somebody who came in what they're called as mega builders to renovate the hotel because it did need $100 million worth of renovations.
Well, we have to explain, first of all, why it was so special. It was the largest wooden structure, I think.
820,000 square feet. And it is arguably the largest occupied wooden structure. You always have to say occupied because a bridge might have more wood in it. But 820,000 square feet, the largest occupied wooden structure in the United States and arguably the world.
And it was beautiful.
Yes, and built entirely out of southern loblolly heart pine, which is a wood that actually petrifies. And so even though this is Florida and everybody says, oh, termites and wood. No, you didn't have to worry about that with this structure. The wood actually becomes more like stone than wood. And it was built by Florida was opened by 2 Henrys, Henry Flagler and Henry Plant. This one was built by Henry Plant as a winter residence for the wealthiest of the travelers.
And this was all the way back in 1896. It was opened in 1896, correct?
It opened January 1897. January 16th, 1897. But it was built for 18 months. He brought in an actual army of workers, 300 men, to build this hotel in 18 months.
And for anyone who hasn't seen it, you can go on the website. There's a website where you can go and see how really, truly magnificent it was.
Actually, my website has more pictures than
say.
Just about everybody.
So, and what is your website?
BonsuBrandvik.com. So it's pretty easy.
And you spell Brandvik, B-R-A-N-D-V-I-K.
That's right.
And Bonsu, it's a nice name. So now, when you got involved in this, just being around the hotel was an inspiration as somebody who was writing and thinking about it. And
well, when they started talking about raising the hotel, I was, and they talked about putting in this ordinance to save and preserve the hotel, I wanted to know what all the big fuss was about because it was a nice place and, you know, all that. But I decided to take a walk when nobody was there. And it was like seeing the hotel for the very first time. All of a sudden, you could feel the history permeating from the walls. And I was walking along, and every single room seemed to call you. I mean, they've got a dining room with over 100 backlit Tiffany glass panels in the ceiling. Another one is, you know, like two stories high with twinkling lights in the ceiling. Another one has wrought iron gates that protect the entrance that are all carved and everything. And I started just thinking, gosh, if these walls could only talk, you know, what stories they would tell.
And so you opened your ears and started listening.
I did. All of a sudden I thought I could tell their stories. And so what I do with my books is it's a combination. The history that I put into my books is factual, but there are a lot of areas that we don't know what happened. And so I fill those with my imagination. And the story is told actually in the present. Each story is told in the present and in a segment of the past. And the way that I arrange that is when somebody checks into the hotel, a woman will check into the hotel with problems. And those problems are very individual to the woman checking in. And they will resonate with some spirits who live at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
And so by doing that, each person's problems are different, so I can have the spirits appear from different segments of the history of the hotel the story of that.
It's very exciting and very intriguing.
Well, it's an interesting way. I mean, I only wanted to tell the history of the hotel. That was, you know, what I wanted to do. But I also wanted to say I was very close with my maternal grandmother. And I always believe there are so many lessons to be learned from generations that came before. And so this was my way of doing both things, telling the history of the hotel and showing how so many of the lessons you've learned in the past are still quite relevant today. So my heroine in the present always learns from the heroine in the past how to fix her problems in today's world.
And do your heroines in the past come across some of the famous people who stayed at the hotel?
They do, actually.
Who are some of the famous people?
For instance, in my recent book, Ripples, when they're back in time, it's during the Prohibition era, when there actually was a speakeasy in the hotel, and it never got raided because the way the hotel is positioned, no one could sneak up on it. In that book, I have a woman who, out of a sense of need, I mean, she has to deal with the conventions of the time, which is the men are the writers, not the women. And so she becomes very efficient at running a sewing factory. And she needs to write pamphlets to tell people how to do that. But she can't be taken seriously because she's a woman. So she writes under her dead husband's name. And some of the people who are at the hotel, Morton Plant being one of them, you know, Henry Plant's son, the man who built the hotel, and he is talking with Henry Ford and Thomas Edison, and they always, got together down in St. Andrew's Pub and, smoked Cuban cigars and drank rum and played cards and things. And so they knew this person when she was young, and they knew how headstrong, and they always complimented her by she had a man's brain. And so what happens is that they see right through it. They know who's writing these pamphlets, and she starts talking to them, and she actually, in my book, she puts the idea into Henry Ford's head about putting his assembly line on give them weekends off, that putting those ideas into his head.
Oh, it's fun. Isn't it fun to play with historical figures
that? Yeah.
That's amazing. So this was a real inspiration for you to have this walk through and get inspired. And I think I love this, the whole idea of going back in time bringing these people to life.
I do too, but I also think that in every generation, there are women who were forward-thinking. And if you get to know me, you'll know that my character, Margaret Plant, was one of those people. She is the only character, by the way, that goes through the entire series of books. Otherwise, everybody's stories are told one time and that's it. But Margaret Plant, who is the second wife of Henry Plant, was very forward-thinking. And when I started researching the hotel, I learned a lot about her. And, for instance, she was out there in fishing and golf tournaments. You know, she played in all of those things. She, when she died, she actually, her money went to partly to the Catholic Church, partly to build a wing on a hospital, and the rest of it went to build a women's college in Connecticut because she thought women should be educated the same as men. And so she was always believing that you need to learn how to take care of yourself and very forward-thinking in that way. So,
wow. This is it's fantastic. I love the whole idea, the whole concept. And as you said, you started with the first book is called Pearls.
Pearls.
Because it's a very mm-hmm. interesting story about how the pearls came. Again, a generational story.
And that's actually another story, is that when I first started thinking about it, there's a story about Morton Plant's second wife, Maisie Plant, and she had a string of pearls, and but she wanted these so badly, and she was kind of a bought-and-paid-for woman. I mean, Morton Plant married her. She was, you know, 40 years younger than him, and he actually paid her husband $8 million to divorce her.
Ooh.
And so he could adopt their son. And he accepted it and went away, and he married this woman, and she spent a lot of money. She immediately put in like Olympic-sized swimming pool at the hotel, and you know, she spent all this. Well, she wanted to buy a set of pearls that were over $1 million. And at that point, Morton put his foot down. But he had given her the family home, which was in on Fifth Avenue in New York City. And so he had given that to her as a wedding gift. So she marched to New York, and she dealt with the guy that she wanted these pearls from, and wound up trading the house for the pearls. And that house is now the house of Cartier Jewels on Fifth Avenue in New York.
Wow.
But she got the pearls, and after that they started coming up with cultivated pearls, and so the pearls dropped in tremendous value, unlike the house. But I had started writing Pearls with that kind of storyline in mind, and immediately it switched, because the more research I did, the more I found out I didn't really admire Maisie. I admired Margaret. And so Margaret, I'm sure you hear from authors all the time where characters come and they start talking. And Margaret has been one of those characters for me that started talking to me very early on, and she still talks, and some of the times I even wonder, what would Margaret do? And when I get to a point in a book.
Oh, that's always wonderful for an author when you get, you know a character so well. And they become a part of you that you don't you can write their part without even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're doing anymore because that person has become so ingrained in you.
Right, and because the way that everybody sets up their fantasy worlds different, and you have to set up a world building rules. And so in my world, spirits and ghosts are not the same thing. A spirit has everything but its physical body. It has its memories and everything, and it can go anywhere it went while it was alive or wherever its ashes are scattered or its body is buried, but nowhere else. A ghost, when the spirits normally would take the lighted path to whatever, and I never try and cross that threshold. Whatever you believe is beyond the lighted path, you believe that. I don't go there. I'm just saying that my spirit realm is in between those two points of life and this lighted path. So if a part of the spirit breaks off from the spirit as it's traveling down the light, that fragment remaining is a ghost. And it's a ghost because it doesn't have the full personality and thinking capabilities. And that's why so often they're specters in my world.
Well, you do create a fascinating world with your books.
Well, thank you.
And I know you're working on the third one of this.
I am.
What you started off with the idea for, but right. I have a feeling you could go.
Right. Well, with Pearls, the spirits that worked on the girl's problem, whose name is Honor Macklin, she is a divorced woman, and her husband is still her business partner. And so she has all of the problems with that. Well, not only that, but he is, she calls him a rat. B. I don't know if I can say the word.
No, or big Ed in there is going to have to beat me.
So he is a philanderer. He was, you know, just really bad. But she learns that he is actually trying to take over the whole company and put her out of the company that she, in fact, started. So then the spirits that kind of understand that problem happen to be the Victorian era spirits. And so we learn all about the hotel when it first opened. In the second book, when the woman checks in.
The Prohibition era. So you
can
go through.
Yeah, and that's Ripples, the second book. And that woman who checks in is dealing with completely different problems. Uh-huh. Her son was killed in an accident where she was driving the car. Completely not her fault. But a mother will feel guilt no matter what. And so she checks in, and those problems resonate with spirits from the Roaring Twenties, the Prohibition era. And
I can see you've had fun with this. I mean, you're having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I want to always inspire my listeners, that you have to have fun with your books. It's just mm-hmm. so nice to be able to get into this world, create your world like
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
You've obviously created a fantastic world.
I have it. And I've always said, well, I'm a Leo. And so Leos like to be in charge. And I was like, what is better than being in charge of the entire world where you make all the rules? And
it's wonderful. Look, I have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to talk about how you did all this research. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script. Get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Bonsu Brandvik, who has written the first two in a series of books called The Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore. Now, for anyone who hasn't been to our area here, the Bellevue Biltmore was a fantastic Victorian-era hotel that, I don't know what's the process now. Is it all gone or is it still gone?
They're in the process of deconstructing the hotel, which is the opposite of construction.
Yeah.
Because the materials that are so valuable, the whole industry right now, the construction industry, is into rebuilding old buildings and bringing them back to life.
Because there are so many fantastic elements to that hotel.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They can't be replaced. For instance, loblolly pine, you can't even harvest that anymore. It's a protected species. So the boards are extremely valuable, every single board. So what deconstruction is, they take big pieces with a crane and lower them down to the ground where they're taken apart by hand, and every every nail is pulled by hand, and then they're salvaged.
Okay. Oh, that's sad. I don't think I could go and look at it because
we're hoping they're going to save the original lobby, which is a tiny portion, but I call it a token of preservation. If they do save it, as he promised, which is still I don't want to be a doubter,
yeah.
But he said he would save the carriage porch as well, and he has demolished the carriage porch. But if he saves, what he's planning to do is save the original lobby and the rooms above it and move it about 2 football fields away on the property and then build around it to make it into a 33-room inn on the property.
Well, that would be nice because it is nice to be able to touch history, too.
Mm-hmm. Still enjoy a chip off our diamond.
Exactly. Now, as I said, you published the first two books, Pearls and Ripples, and you're working on the third one. And I just wanted to mention, I noticed that Pearls, and that you used smash words.
I did use
writers are always asking me, you know, how should they go about getting published? What should they do? So what's your experience with smash words?
Well, let me tell you, at the time, I had not planned to be a self-published author. I had planned to take the whole New York route and all that, but the hotel was in dire situation, and so I needed to get my book out there, where even if I would have been fortunate enough to get a literary agent immediately, the process would have taken at least 18 months to get the book out, and I didn't have that kind of time. So I stumbled into Smashwords, which was so fortunate for me because I was going through Create Space, it was an Amazon product, and they're I don't want to ever say anything bad about Create Space, I like them, but they're not very user-friendly. Smashwords, on the other hand, when I went there, I found that the services that they were trying to sell at Create Space, they were giving you contacts where you could hire people on your own to do various aspects of the work that goes into, you know, everything from editing to formatting the interior, everything, and bringing them up to Smashwords standards. So by hiring the people on this list, you already knew that they knew what they were doing, and it would streamline your book. And then what Smashwords will do, which is, I think, wonderful, is they then take all the different marketing channels, and whether it's, you know, Sony or whatever, you know, Barnes & Noble, you know, they'll put them all out there where everybody can find your book no matter what media they're using.
Well, that's great. Well, that's one place that every writer should have a look at, Smashwords.
Definitely.
It's really great. Now, how did you do all this research? It's amazing amount. As I was reading the book, I kept saying, wow, with Pearls, you know, you're back in the Victorian time, and You really captured the clothes, the food, everything. Yeah. It was fantastic. Well, how did you do that?
Well, after I had walked through the hotel, and like you said, I had this sense of it, I decided that if my books were going to have that ring of truth to them, especially since so many people knew about this famous hotel, it wasn't like I was making up a hotel. So I started researching everything I could. I went out to Heritage Village, is a nice local resource where we have all the historic archives of the area. I went to the town of Bel Air, where the hotel is, and researched their archives. I went on tours, and I was that pest on the tour that just kept asking endless questions of the docent, and I did that several times. And then I took a bunch of what I call them unsanctioned tours, where the fifth floor was closed off to the public, and I would sneak up there and sneak down into the part of the basement that, you know, people weren't allowed in. And I took pictures, and I wondered, and I was, like, for instance, I sat on the edge of the ice keep, which is so large, it's like an indoor swimming pool in the basement, which was where they used to bring the ice, huge ice blocks in on the rail car and put them in there. And I would just visualize what it was like.
And everybody in those days, to get ice here in Florida, that was mm-hmm. such a big deal. They're going to the Bellevue Biltmore and they can have ice to drink.
Yep, it was an amazing thing. And that's part of the thing about why the Bellevue Biltmore was such a success, is that Henry Plant was so smart. And as I started reading it, it was amazing that he built He was a transportation magnate, so he built a railroad that dead-ended at his hotel. So you could either get out and stay at his hotel, or you could go someplace else. And then he was, he didn't stop there. He was one of the first people to put restaurants in his hotel and shops in his hotel. And he realized that once they were bed and fed, they needed something to do. So he arranged for all kinds of tours, hunting, golf. He had a racetrack on the property that then became a bicycle racing track, and then, of course, golf. He had the first golf club in all of Florida was at the Bellevue Biltmore.
And all of this you gathered through your research, and that's so much fun to do that kind of research.
It is. I got kicked out of the basement and the attic and everything a lot, but I now know that hotel, and especially now that it's being torn down, I'm so glad that I broke the rules and did it, because I have hundreds and hundreds of photographs that simply wouldn't have been taken. They would never be able to be, you know, and by doing it, I want to bring the hotel to life, no matter what era we're talking about. For instance, like in Pearls, when the hotel first opened, everybody notices that the grand aisle is called the promenade, and it's a very wide aisle. And I discovered that the reason for that was because when the hotel opened, ladies were wearing hoop skirts, and you had to have the aisle wide enough that two of them could pass one another comfortably. And I learned that the higher the floor of the hotel, the less valuable it was, because you had to climb those stairs.
Uh-huh.
So as a matter of fact, the fifth floor was only considered useful for hotel management to live in, and that would be where the guests, if they brought nannies and servants, they could stay up on the fifth floor.
Did you find menus? Did you find all of this information about what the restaurant served?
Yes, and fortunately for me, because I was in there before it ever closed, and because I am a bit of a shutterbug, they had a little museum. And instead of just touring the museum, I went in and I was taking pictures of every exhibit in the museum. And so now when I go to describe, like the book right now is when during World War II, the hotel was used by the Army Air Corps, and it housed 3,000 soldiers. And so I have the actual picture of a soldier's uniform who stayed there, and so I can describe it very accurately.
Oh, wow. I just love this kind of work. I think that's, you know, it's just it's so much fun, and I was talking to somebody recently, and they were talking, they come from a small town, and they always wanted to write a book about it. I said, well, why don't you? And he said, well, I don't know. I said, well, you know, you've got the resources. You still have friends and some family. Go back there and do mm-hmm. exactly what you've done. That take pictures and look up the history, go to the archives, and hopefully talk to people who you know, remember things.
Well, even right now, as the hotel is being deconstructed, I take pictures of it about every 2 weeks, because in the fourth book in the series, which is called Nails, it'll be about, in the history part, will be about the building of the original hotel. And the current story will be about the demolition of the hotel. And of course, because I can't have a woman checking in to the hotel at that point, I'm getting around that by having a woman working on the deconstruction crew who is homeless. And without anybody knowing it, she's sleeping down in the basement tunnels. And that's how I'll be able to, you know, get her connected with the spirits, because it's always when they're sleeping, that's when the spirits connect with the present day characters.
You're making this very intriguing. We're all going to be very, very anxious to read, not just Redemption, but Nails.
Yeah, well, each part of the history, and that's the part where I'm so lucky as a writer, is the history is fascinating. I'd have to be a terrible writer not to make it sound interesting.
You do make it so interesting. It really, I love the present day stories, and then the back in time stories, because as I said, you make the era come alive that you're working on.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful.
Appreciate that. And like I said, the reason I started writing the books was because I wanted to show that the women of those era still had, I mean, there were so many things that when it's matters of the heart and matters of actually financial well-being and just having your equal say in things, those things haven't changed through time. And that's why women today still, you know, we listen to Charlotte Bronte, you know, her books, and we'll read all of that. You know, there's so many people that are still relevant, and that's because if you read their characters went against the convention of time. You know, they were very strong characters, and they had their way, and that's why they're still relevant, and that's true with so many lessons from the past that are still relevant today. And there's always the saying of, I say, well, my books are learning from your elders in the extreme.
And they are very strong. Your characters of women are strong and
yes.
And have something to say and something to really, that they want to impart.
Yeah, Margaret Plant is always very disappointed that women are not running the world by now, you know, and she puts that through, and she doesn't accept excuses. It's like, if I could do it in the Victorian era, women of wealth had very few, you know, rights and powers. Women without wealth had almost none, and yet they still managed to secure their futures and everything and work, and that's what I had Margaret do. Is you know, her statement was, well, you know, you are the second wife of Henry Plant, and you've borne him no children to take care of you. So if he dies, how will you be all right? And she goes, oh, I've built up a nest egg that is, you know, could last me if I live to be 100. Because what she did realize is that even in the Victorian era, when your husband died, you got to keep your personal property. So she recommended to all the women she knew to develop an immediate affinity for fine jewelry and fine art, because those personal possessions would be yours, and you could sell them after if your husband died and his children left you with nothing, you would still have your personal possessions and you could live comfortably.
A clever woman. I can see why you're attracted to her.
Yeah, so I just, and she, like I said, she has come alive, and I believe that she's very, very three-dimensional to me anyway, and she is a lot of the character of my grandmother, who was a very wise woman and was very influential in my life as well.
What your actual process of when you do your research, what are you doing? How do you save it? Are you doing it on the computer? Do you write?
I maintain a timeline, for one thing, with the hotel, the plants, what was happening in this part of Florida, and how everything interconnects, and then I go back to that. And then I've been very fortunate, for instance, right now, when I started working on Redemption with the soldiers, I wanted to find out a little bit more about the soldiers, and I started doing my research, looking for everything about the Army Air Corps in Florida and elsewhere, and all of a sudden I stumbled across a website, and it had all these pictures of uniforms, but I wasn't quite clear on something, but it had a lot of information, and I sent an email to the person who put up the website and thanked them for putting this website up. I said, you wouldn't believe how useful this is. And it turns out that the man is in California. He is a homicide detective. And he said, I do this for a pastime. How else can I help you? And then he wound up, I said, well, there is a murder in this novel that I'm currently writing. And he said, oh, let me help you out with that. And so, you know, so I found that people are amazingly giving and, you know, willing to share a wealth of knowledge. But the other thing that I do, which I think is a little unique to writers, is I interview the elderly a lot. And they have their stories. These are firsthand stories. You just can't beat that. Or they'll tell you stories about their parents and their grandparents. For instance, the story that I'm writing right now, I've been talking to people who, back during World War II, remember what it was like when all of a sudden 3,000 soldiers invaded tiny little sleepy Clearwater at the time. And can you imagine, suddenly there's 3,000 soldiers and all the boys you went with to high school with are gone. They're all fighting the war elsewhere.
So you met people who actually were there.
Were here, and they were, you know, of course, you know, little children at the time, but they still remember that, and they tell me stories that their mothers and fathers and their grandparents. So I've talked to people whose grandparents, for instance, worked at the hotel. One woman sewed dresses. There was a dress shop in the basement of the hotel. And so everybody would have all these formal gowns because for every event, you couldn't show up in the same gown. And so they had a dress shop in the basement. And her grandmother was one of the seamstresses in that dress shop.
Wow. That's exciting to come across that kind of personal story that you can then use when you're...
And I always ask them, I said, would you mind if I use their name? And, you know, so I'll use the real name of the person in the story, unless they object, and then, of course, I won't. Yeah. But
most people love it.
They do. They enjoy the fact that...
they're mentioned.
Yeah. For instance, the story that I'm writing right now, a woman was telling me that her great-grandfather had worked on the hotel, and he did some of the fine woodwork, you know, the trim, because it has a lot of what they call gingerbread and different carving on the moldings and things like that. And he had done that kind of work. But he also had a cow, and he grew strawberries. And so he would bring over strawberries and cream, and he would sell it to the other workers. And then, you know, so he made his little extra money there. They would have strawberries and cream for their breakfast break or whatever.
So all these little stories help to really make a story come alive.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
I always say, you know, well, they always say the devil's in the detail, and I think the interest is in the details.
It is. Those little things are the kind of things that you remember after you put the book down. You look at strawberries again, and you I have that story. And I love that ability of a writer to give all these little details that make the story whole.
And it's a very unique series, because normally when you talk to a writer who writes a series, you have a primary protagonist and, you know, say a cozy murder mystery or whatever. She finds herself in all these mysteries, murders and all that. But my series, there's only one character that goes from book to book. Well, two if you count the hotel. but one character, Margaret Hunt, is it. And so at the end of each book, I always write a lengthy epilogue, because I know that my readers need to have a conclusion for all of these characters in the book. And still I'll hear, like in Pearls, I have a little boy who's clairvoyant, and he talks with spirits regularly. And I still have, he's 4 years old in Pearls. And I still have fans coming back and saying, please write another book and have him be grown up. And I want to know what happened to Cody. You know?
That's fun when fans get so involved in the book and they really care about the characters. I have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about, because you are inspirational, how you have inspired other writers, and about your fantastic writers group. Okay? We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property, from trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.com. LightsCameraRR.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Bansu Brenvic, who is not only a great writer, and she's written the first two in a series of four books based on the spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore, but she's also a very great inspiration for writers. And she has one of the best, certainly I think the best writers group that I've met with here in the area. And Bansu, tell us about why did you get involved in setting up a writer's group? And
well, writing can be a very lonely process. And I realized when I first started writing that I would like to meet with other people. And at the time, I knew so little. I just sat down and I started writing a book. And I didn't know much about the craft. I didn't know the difference between genres. I honestly thought at the time Pearls was a romance novel, and since then I've learned, of course, it's not at all. It's women's fiction, women's literary fiction. It does have a romance angle in it, but when I started writing, I thought it was romance, and so I decided to set up a group that would be Clearwater Romance Writers. And so almost immediately I found that people that were interested were saying, well, my book's not exactly romance, but it has romance in it. Can I come? And I said, of course you can come. And so almost immediately I realized that it wasn't a romance writers group. It was Clearwater Writers. And so I just eliminated the romance from the title and started inviting any writers who wanted to come and share their work and receive verbal critiques. And there's a lot of different ways that writers can help one another. And people are always giving me suggestions on how I can improve the book, but I think I have found, or my meetings, but I found a way to that works for me, and it works for a lot of other writers, and that is that we meet every other week, and I have to limit participation to 23 writers, but people are always moving in and out, especially writers will come in while they're really hot and heavy on their book, and then sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes they finish their project, and they, you know, they'll disappear for a while and then come back. Some people will stay with me for a long time, but their genres are so different, and I find it's extremely valuable to all of our writers to hear different genres, because if you hear the same work that you're doing all the time, your work starts sounding a lot like one another. But if you hear the different genres, get different points of view, you'll see things in holes in your work. You'll see a different aspect of it. Like we've taught people who are writing blood and gut war movies.
Yeah, well, I was really impressed that you did have, I mean, you had cozy mystery writers, and then you had somebody working on zombies, and
yes.
You know, and somebody working on a thriller, or mm-hmm. somebody working on a paranormal thing.
So it's fantasy.
Yeah. And it works so well. What I like about this, the whole setup, you have, they read a chapter.
Well, they'll read for 10 minutes.
For 10 minutes. So whatever it takes. So, you hand out at the meeting copies of what they're going to read, so mm-hmm. that people can read along with it.
And write notes.
And write notes, mm-hmm. and make comments, and mm-hmm. and hopefully helpful comments that, you know, not just, you know, getting the typos or those kinds of the grammatical errors, but actually saying, well, I didn't quite understand this aspect, or that character was good, I'd like to know more.
Exactly.
I like that when there was one meeting I went to, and somebody said, oh, I'd like more of that character.
Right.
Exactly, like what you had mentioned earlier about.
Yeah. And it's beneficial for me having men and women in the group, you know, in equal number, because say I'm writing where, you know, a man and woman are starting to get together, and you know, where I think I've written him so nice and all that kind of stuff. And one of the men will say, yeah, right, like a man would ever say that in a million years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wound up getting a lot of different perspective from people who, and we have people who are writing, you know, nonfiction as well as fiction. And just their different perspectives of, if I was reading this, I'd be wondering XXX. And you just pick up so much information. So what we do is when, like you said, we hand out the work, and you, when it's your turn to read, which we do by whoever shows up first gets to read first down to the first five writers, and then after that we draw names to, you know, you put your name in a bowl, and that's the order we write. And of course, the later in the night, the smaller your group of listeners, because people have to leave. So it's always behooves everybody. So now I've got people showing up, you know, at 5 o'clock for a meeting that starts at 7.
I noticed that.
but at the same time, then what we do is we go around the room and you get verbal critiques. Because a lot of people can't really write their comments, what, you know, they're really feeling. We actually even have some who have never written a word. They're just starting to, you know, find their feet. And we have at least one person who says, I don't plan to write. I read a lot, and I enjoy offering critiques, which is great, too, you know. Partly because then she never needs 10 minutes of the meeting. but then we go around the room, and so we just say, I agree with that person, or I don't, and here's something else I found, and you might want to look at a different word choice. So it's very instant feedback.
And I think it's very constructive. I found that the people all had something, you know, from a different perspective, because they all look at the characters a little bit differently. And as you said, with the variety that you have of
right.
writers, and they all look at it, and I was very impressed with how constructive the criticism was.
They are, you know? and you'll notice that the comments change depending on the level of experience.
Yes.
Like when somebody is writing their very first chapter of their memoir, you're going to be very gentle with that person, as opposed to somebody who has written, you know, 20 books, and, you know, they're used to more criticism, and plus they're going to turn in a more professional product. They're going to read because they have all that experience, and so for them you're going to catch the periods or you missed a quotation mark, you know, kind of thing. Where with the other writer, you just kind of give them gentle, you know, guidance and tell them, don't worry about the periods right now. Mm-hmm. Worry about getting your story on paper, which is the most important part.
Exactly, and there are so many people out there who do have. They really want to write, and mm-hmm. I think a group like yours can inspire them to that next level. They might not be ready every week to have something
right.
read,
mm-hmm.
But knowing that if they do a page a day, you know, mm-hmm. and if you just keep going.
For some it encourages them. They know they've got 2 weeks to have something written, and so it acts as more that, you know, the carrot type thing of, oh, I've got to have something ready. But the idea of the timing, how long they take to write everything, that's completely up to them. If they want to read, if they don't want to read. We have one of our writers who is writing a steampunk novels, and for a while there he decided, okay, I'm done with this book, and until I get something really going on my next book in the series, I'll just read. I'm starting a little blog, and so I'll read little blog inserts. And yeah, so it's completely up to you what you want to read. And we also spend the first half an hour of the meeting talking about things that are about the craft and that are going on in the whole industry.
Good.
They can help you.
Okay, well, I highly recommend Bonsu's
Clearwater Writers Meetup.
Clearwater, and you can find it at Meetup. Right?
Meetup.com.
And sign up. It's a very, very popular event. And as she said, it's limited in number. But it's,
and we serve chocolate chip cookies.
As well. What more can you say? Now, of course, that's not the only writers group you belong to. You also are very involved in helping to save.
Historic.
I love it.
Yeah. What I started is a group, and I actually started it with my mom. My mom and I were talking one day, and she told me that the first job she ever had was cracking eggs. And I would never have dreamed that could be a job. But during World War II, they needed powdered eggs for all the soldiers who were fighting. And so she worked at a farm where she, you know, alternated between where she cracked eggs, and she had big hands, and so she could crack several eggs pick up eggs at a time and crack them all, drop the shells in one place and the eggs in another. And then on other days she had to sit in the candle room, where she sat on a one-legged stool so you couldn't fall asleep because the candle room was, of course, dark. It just had the candlelight where you watched the eggs go by, and if they were fertilized, you would take your finger and snap them and bump them off, and they would go fall into a trough behind where they became pig food.
Who knew this? I mean, I know. Isn't this fascinating?
When I heard that, that's my exact...
I mean, my gosh.
That was my exact reaction.
Have you used it in a book yet?
No, but I did. That inspired me was as wow. far as that. I was like, oh my gosh, well, what else do I not know about my mother? And it turned out that she worked in a factory during World War II after that, where they worked on the nose cone of torpedoes. And she stood up to a overbearing floor manager who was wanting to cut corners. And she's like, I have four brothers who are fighting, and this torpedo, you know, if it malfunctions, it might cost them their lives. And, you know, so she just, and all these things. So I was like, well, if my mother, who I always thought was boring, you know, had all these kind of adventures, I said, we need to write them down. And they have a lot of books for that purpose. But the problem with the books is that they don't really expand. Like, you might have a lot to say on this topic and nothing to say on that topic. And so what I encouraged people to do is, I said, writing a memoir is difficult even for a practiced writer. But anybody can sit down and write a memory. And so I started calling each memory a patch. And I said, just write a patch and date it. You know, a general range, or it could be something your grandfather told you. It's completely from your perspective. There is no research involved. You write what you remember about it.
And where are you doing this?
Right now at Bel Air Towers is a place, but I am probably going to be moving the group to a local library just to expand it a little bit more to get it out of the one retirement community. But anyway, I said over time, just like every patch sewn together eventually becomes a quilt, eventually you will have a patchwork memoir, and that's what the name of the group is called. And I advertised that one on Facebook because this is a group anybody can set up in their church, in their local libraries, whatever.
Wow, it's fantastic. I have to talk to you more about that. Now, okay. I'm running out of time, but I want to again say to everyone, they should go to your website and tell everybody your website again.
BonsuBranvik.com.
And you can see there fantastic photos of the Bellevue Biltmore and
learn about its history and the books.
Exactly. Yeah. And get the books and really enjoy yourself and going back in time and finding some spirits. We have to also one day talk about the spirits that you've heard about.
Yes, that's the 20 real spirits of the real ghosts of the Bellevue Biltmore, I call
them. Well, we're going to have you back on when Redemption comes out. And
right,
it will
lovely.
Be lots of fun to talk to you about that. And I'm already so intrigued with nails, the whole idea how clever it is to think of putting the homeless lady living in the the bowels of the hotel.
Of the hotel, yep.
Fantastic. So, Bonsu Branvik, thank you so much for being here today
in the studio. Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
It's been a joy for me. And I want to thank all my listeners today. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. Bonsu knows about that, and to hear your words spoken on stage or screen. So start writing. And meanwhile, remember, live life with love and treasure each day. Find your joy and share it. Bye.